Hello.
My goodness. Hello. There we go. Just normal X stuff here. yeah. Always something, I swear. Things are going great though. Let me bring up a couple people here. We got Blake in the house. Let's see. Why is this not working for me? Seems this is a weird thing. I'm clicking on him, but it doesn't say it doesn't say, well, never mind. There we go. Thank you. Looks like you got it, Ishan.
Yeah, I was
Perfect.
I clicked on both Blake and Taylor,
Cool.
but sometimes
Thanks.
X takes a while.
We could also bring Anthony up here, and we could
Oh
also
wow,
bring
yeah.
Magnolia JS up here and Jason up here too, because he's a regular. Why not? Come on, y'all. All right. Awesome. And Toby, yeah, what's up from we'll bring Toby up here. There we go.
Oh hey.
From Million JS. All
Coming at
right.
you from Italy. Ayo.
Yo, our boy
Yeah.
Anthony is in Italy right now on his honeymoon, but he's still here
Yeah.
on Spaces, y'all. Watch out.
Yeah,
Anthony,
we just finished dinner.
What a part of
nice.
Italy you in?
We are in Cinque Terre right now.
Nice. Wife and I just went to Italy for 2 weeks, about 3 weeks ago. So,
Very cool. Yeah, we hit Rome. We were just in Florence, and we're in
Florence
Cinque
is
Terre right now.
awesome.
I like Florence. Yeah, honestly, I kind of hated Rome, but Florence is nice.
Yeah, we did Rome in 4 hours.
That's probably about as much time as you need. Wow.
Well, Anthony said something about Rome being like New York.
It's like a dirtier, in my opinion, a dirtier New York.
It's very, very similar to New York. It's honestly, it felt like I was in New York.
Jeez, that's something else. Yeah, it's crazy how some of the parts of the world can seem so similar to other parts of the world, right? I mean, it's crazy. Even especially in the United States, when I'm like going to another state, you're like expecting, maybe hoping for something much different. Sometimes you get it, but other times it's like very similar in many aspects. So kind of interesting.
Well, the cool thing about Rome is like it's dirty, and you're like waiting on a subway for like the train or whatever, and you look to your right, and it's like a glassed like artifact from like
From
before Jesus,
1700s. Yeah,
yeah, or like
right.
no, before Jesus. I mean,
Right.
literally, it's like
Yeah,
here's a wall
yeah,
that was here in like 2000 BC, and you're like Jesus Christ. So like that's the big difference.
Yeah, I said it's like New York with older buildings.
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny. All right. Well, thank y'all so much for coming. Greatly appreciate it. I'm sure we'll hear more about Anthony's travels. Super excited about that. But more than anything, I'm excited here to have Taylor Dessen and Blake Watson with us and Magnolia. I think we have someone on the other side of the pumpkin, which we'll talk about here shortly. Yes, with the hand clapping. Thank you so much. Greatly appreciate y'all being here. Yeah, I just want to say really quick, whether you're a beginner developer or whether you're an advanced developer, it doesn't matter. We love to hear from everybody up here. So please, please, please feel free to come up. If you're a regular, we're going to invite you up anyway, and you're going to have to say something. I'm kidding. But I will invite you up, and you can partake in this conversation with us and have a good time. That's what this is all about, right? JavaScript Jam is, very much about being as brand agnostic as possible and just having fun, and just giving all the loves everywhere, right? Love everybody. Love and peace, y'all. Love and peace. Anyway. Taylor with the laughing face there. But yeah, thank you all so much. Greatly appreciate it. And remember that we do this every Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, except for when we don't. But more than that, we are here. All right. With that being said, I'll make a couple introductions and then we'll kick it off, I guess. So my name is Scott Steinlogge. I'm the technical community manager at Edgio. Ishan, what's up?
Hey everyone, I'm Ishan, the VP of product for the Edgio Applications platform. And one other call out I'll add on top of what Scott said. If you haven't already, go to javascriptjam.com.
Yes,
and there's
subscribe.
A newsletter curated usually by Anthony. This week it was myself subbing in, but a great way to keep up to date on everything in web development.
Totally.
And then we have Anthony, who's technically on vacation in PTO, but Anthony, why don't you take the
hello,
time
hello.
To introduce yourself.
I'm Anthony Kempole, developer advocate at Edgio, and great job on the newsletter while I was gone. I was reading them, so happy to see it continuing on while I'm on vacation.
Nice. Yes. Ishan's been doing a great job, I think. So I feel wonderful.
I mean, technically, it's his newsletter before mine.
Yeah, that's true.
I think Anthony does a better job, but I was happy to sub in as needed. Let's talk about introduce our guest today from
totally.
The Magnolia JS conference.
Absolutely. Taylor, would you like to go first? Or Blake?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Sorry about that.
No worries.
Little slow to that. Yeah, my name is Taylor Dessen. I live in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm a talent advocate at Gun.io, a freelance marketplace platform for senior engineers that want to jumpstart their freelance part-time careers. Stoked to be at Magnolia here in, 13 days or something like that.
Yes, super soon. Absolutely. Blake, what's up, man? How are you? Would love to hear from you.
Yo, doing good. I'm Blake Watson. I work with MRI Technologies. They're a contractor that does stuff for NASA and like commercial space partners. So I work on some web apps for them. And before that, I was at an ad agency. And before that, all the time, ever since I learned how to code, I've been working on side projects, which is what my talk is about.
Nice. That kind of goes hand in hand there. Side projects, Taylor talking about side freelance work.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. And NASA, man. Yeah, I read something about currently working on a spacesuit management system. That's pretty sweet. Jeez, man. Like, not everybody gets that opportunity in their life. Super cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It just kind of fell into my lap, so I'm very happy.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely get more into that, and also we'll talk a little bit about your guys' talks for MagnoliaJS coming up, just to give people a sneak peek and some excitement, FOMO. Don't want them to be missing out on this MagnoliaJS event, as usual. I mean, it's going to be top-notch, so super excited for that. Yeah, Kayla, did you want to come up here and introduce yourself? It's up to you. I'll invite
you
up here.
Well, actually, before we jump into that,
sure.
I noticed we have Magnolia JS. I assume that's either Kayla or Richard, the creators of Magnolia.
Yeah.
I've clicked the invite to speak. It'd be great to
that's what I was just
have
saying.
Them come up. There we
absolutely.
Go.
Absolutely.
And, just first of all, we should tell people when it is, where it is, October 17th and 18th.
Yep.
2023 at the Mississippi Museum of Art in Jackson, Mississippi. But I'd love for them to come up and give the pitch about what's great and answer just a few questions about the conference. So yep. I don't know if we've got them up on stage. Why don't you take it away and introduce the conference?
Please.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Kayla Swain. I'm one of the organizers along with my husband, Richard, for Magnolia JS. And yeah, we'll have it on the 17th and 18th of this month in Jackson, Mississippi. So Magnolia JS is just really something that we wanted to make sure we kept going to keep highlighting the developer community we have in Jackson, Mississippi, and show people that, Mississippi isn't everything terrible you've seen in the news, and that we have like a lot of developers here and a thriving tech community. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I was just going to say one thing on top of that, like you guys started this and you've been really funding a lot of this out of your own pockets. I mean, that says a lot about how much you guys care for the developer community and, obviously, and then also for your local community, to be doing that and funding all this out of your guys' own pockets. I don't know if a lot of people know that, and so I think that's important piece to put out there. I mean, to show like how much you guys really do care and want this to be success for everybody.
So yeah,
that's really cool.
We're hoping that someday that won't be the case.
yeah, totally.
Because spending upwards of $30,000 a year for the conference isn't ideal. But Yeah, we've had a couple sponsors this year, and like Blake's one of our sponsors. So we really, really, really appreciate that. Yeah.
You've been doing this for, you know, it says 5 years. This is the fifth year. Was there any particular, you know, event or thing that was a trigger for it, or you'd been wanting to do for a while and you finally just had the support to do it? Like, was there anything that precipitated it, kicked it off?
So we didn't start the event. Another local developer, JC Hyatt, actually started Magnolia.js. He ran it for 2 years and then handed it off to me to run. It's a lot. And so he was ready to start a family. And so he was ready to kind of pass the baton, so to speak. So yeah, just, I know that was kind of the goal around that was, I think maybe the city of Jackson or somebody like that had really wanted something like that here. And I think that was kind of the catalyst for it.
Okay. How would you describe, you know, for those who haven't been there, you know, just the tech scene in, you know, Jackson, Mississippi area? Is it lean toward a particular industry? Is it focused on a particular area? Like, just how would you describe it?
I mean, it's small, but there's also, like, I wouldn't say it leans towards any particular industry. We have a lot of people who work in telecommunications because we have a local telecommunications company in the area. We've got a lot of government contractors. We've got a lot of people who work for the government directly. And so the tech community is just doesn't really lean in one industry or the other, doesn't really lean in one stack or the other. It just heavily depends on which company you work for. And so we try to aim towards, like, mostly front end, and I'm, like, kind of air quoting right now. but we try to have full stack stuff so that everybody can get something out of it. And even if you're not strictly a web developer, maybe you could still get something out of it too.
Yeah, I noticed it wasn't entirely all front end in the talks. And so that makes sense, especially if you're saying, you know, people span the full spectrum. Do you feel there's a startup ecosystem or scene in the area, or do you think it's maybe nascent?
You know, you hear of a few startups in the area, but I couldn't really speak to how prevalent startups are. Most of the people that I know are working for either like smaller kind of established companies in the area or work for larger established companies in the area, or even like work for other companies around the country, around the world, but work remotely from here.
Yeah, I would imagine remote was potentially a huge boon in terms of expanding the work opportunities. Is that your sense?
That is my sense, and that's what I hope to continue, because I know a lot of people in previous years have, you know, they've gone, moved out of the state to get better opportunities, better pay somewhere else. And so I'm hoping, since a lot of things are more remote focused now, that we can kind of help highlight those jobs around the nation, around the world, just so people realize that they don't have to leave home to get a good paying job.
Yeah, that's really important. Previous company I was at, we were remote before the pandemic. And we found it was a really useful hiring tool because it opened us up to a range of candidates, and we were, you know, headquartered in the Bay Area, that were just, you know, weren't going to come to the Bay Area because of its cost of living. And it was great to be able to, you know, pull from basically anyone who's qualified in the US. And we built our first remote team. I think that was like 4 years before the pandemic. And it was like a win-win. On both sides. And then when everyone went remote, it was like, now we had to compete with the big guys again.
Exactly.
But I think it's been, and now there, some of those guys are pulling it back. So
I saw an article about this, how they're saying that people who went remote immediately, like they lost productivity, but because to get the productivity boosts, you need to like know how to be remote. You need to be able to take advantage of people who are in other places. And there's like all these things you need to do to actually get productivity boosts from working remote. And if you just go remote, you lose productivity. But if you do it right, you gain productivity.
It's a really good point. It's like almost anything. You've got to do it the right way to get the benefit. Okay, well, that's we should let our
also real quick in our we had an interview recently with Ryan Magoon go live, and in that interview we were asking him what conferences he was excited about, and Magnolia was one that he name dropped. I was listening back to that, and I'm like, that's hey, we mentioned Magnolia in this, so it's yep. It's something that I hear on the lips of community members frequently, and that's even something I say in the interview. I'm like, people always talk about Magnolia and how great it is, so it's. It's something yep. that people who've been really enjoy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Blake and other folks on here, like, I feel like there's some great conversation in that podcast that you guys might enjoy. It's really cool. So,
anyway. While we're talking about remote work, I just want to throw out, like, this is something I care a lot about because I'm a person who has a pretty severe physical disability. And I did work in an office previously, but I switched to a remote company actually like right before the pandemic happened. So they were already a remote company, like who knew how to do remote stuff. But it's really, I like the idea that like this work can be done from anywhere. And I think, you know, companies going remote gives people with disabilities a very good opportunity to be able to use their skills and work and, you know, be able to have the, the things that they need. You know, you can work in your own environment. It's kind of like accessible to you, you know, but you can still work, a good job in tech. So, yeah, I care a lot about the remote work
scene. That's awesome. Yeah, that is very cool. I mean, it's not every day that you get to hear that perspective, and it's really phenomenal that we got to have you here today to talk about your perspective on that. I'd love to hear more of it, like as we go on through the conversation and stuff, and like how different things from your perspective. It's really, really great to hear, and I'd love to promote that more and help in any way we can, right? So it's awesome.
Yeah, maybe that's actually a good seg. You know, Blake, if you want to talk about either that a little bit more or talk about what you're going to be talking about, your talk is titled The Joys of Home Cooked Apps. Do you want to give yeah. maybe the audience the pitch for what you're talking about? And I just want to shout out what I really loved in your bio is you said, when not doing nerd stuff, he can be found. And then it says, checks notes. Never mind. He only does nerd stuff. And I felt a lot of resonance with that. But do you want to keep talking about the remote or your talk, The Joys of Home Cooked Apps?
Sure. Well, I mean, I don't have more to say about remote except for that. I just think everyone should do it. Pretty much, but yeah. My talk is The Joys of Home Cooked Apps. And so it's about sort of the personal side of software development. It's about the type of apps that you can make for yourself. Because, you know, it's easy to think that like if you make software, it's gotta be like for a client, or it's gotta be like a package someone can use, it's gotta be distributed or, you know, shipped to a customer base or whatever, but I like this idea that you can just create stuff that isn't made for mass distribution. Like you can literally just make something that like you and your friends use or you and your family use for something, and it doesn't need to be like polished or like generic. You know, you can literally make it for like the three people that are going to use it. Because we have like software developers, you know, it's pretty amazing if you really think about it. We can just, you know, make software and put this technology into the world. Like we have it's a sort of superpower, you know, if you will. And, you can really, you know, it's easy to think about what you need to do for your work and stuff, but it's like, you can actually just make things for yourself that makes your life easier or better. And, you know, if software and technology isn't, you know, making life better, then what's the point of all of it, you know? So in my talk, I'm just going to kind of go into the what, why, how, you know, of home cooked apps and like just share some examples. And I've got a bunch of examples that I've done, but I've been trying to get people to submit their own ones. And yeah, I've got some pretty interesting ones to share. So that'd be fun.
That's very cool. There's two interesting themes there. There's the the learning something from it, like you win and get something out of it if you maybe use a new technology, and then you're potentially helping other people. And it's not like it may be helping, you know, people you don't know, but it's people, you know, in your own, you know, community or family or, you know, relationships that you're helping out. So it's very immediate. And I, you know, I personally love, you know, coding up random small apps myself. I'm curious if there's, you know, one particular example you want to share that's your favorite.
Yeah, so this is probably one of the most useful things I've ever made in my you know, time programming since like the mid 2000s. It is a so I have caregivers that work with me, you know, in different shifts. And at the end of their pay period, we have to turn in these timesheets. And they're kind of complicated and, like, annoying to fill out a lot of times. And so, you know, at one point, probably like a decade ago, I was like, I'm just going to make a thing that will take some... basically, I didn't want to write down stuff in a spreadsheet because I'm lazy. So I made, like, a sort of a markdown for working shifts. And it's just like my little syntax, and I use like some jQueries, you know, up in there. And I made this little thing that I can print out and I can give it to my caregivers, and it lets them know how to fill in the timesheets. And I've been using that same thing for like 10 years now, and it saved me like a ton of time. It's not like glamorous, you know, or anything, but it was just like, I need to make this. And I've peeked into the code before. I don't know how it works. I'm looking at it. It's the messiest, most terrible code, but it works great. So I'm just like, ship it, because I'm the only you know, customer.
I've had that experience of coming back to a side project and being like, I don't remember what I was thinking when I wrote this.
It can go both ways. You know, you can look at old code that you've written and be like, wow, what was I smoking when I wrote this? But then also you can be like, man, I was like a genius back then. I don't know how I thought of this.
Yeah. Well, what I think is actually the really important takeaway, though, from that story is like, it's a powerful reminder of like, there's so much that we interact with as software in, you know, everybody's lives, but so much of those interfaces or the way people interact with it does not perfectly interface with whatever the workflow is in that context. Whether, you know, somebody built the system, and I'll say this as a product manager, like a product manager or designer, you know, thought through, here's the lowest or the most common way I can solve the problem, but they're not in every single context. And this creating side projects like this to really kind of iterate and improve is really important. So a reminder that it's not always the perfect interface, the ones that they hand you in almost any application.
Yeah, I mean, we run into that situation, you know, at work, you know, working on our apps for NASA, like, you know, our customers, we kind of work in a very, like, iterative way. And so, like, the developers and the project managers, you know, will basically come up with, okay, we should solve this problem this way. And then we might put that in front of the customers, and then they'll start using it and be like, this is, what are you doing? This is awful. Like, obviously, I know I don't need this form field right now because I don't know the answer to this until, you know, later. Please don't, why is this required? Or, you know, so we have to, you know, sort of iterate and take into consideration, like, the context that the, you know, the user is in. And yeah, doing your own, you know, small projects is a good way to, like, you know, practice that, because you can know exactly, you know, what you and your friends or your family's the only user, so you can design for that.
Yeah, exactly. There's a, I don't know if you've seen it, there's a animated GIF about like what it's like watching a user use your product for the first time, and it's like, I think it's people drinking water out of a cup, and like everyone just uses it wrong. Like the animation is the idea, like you thought it was going to be used in this particular way. But then when it actually gets used by a customer and you watch it, you're like, oh wow, why did I even think they would, this seemed obvious to me, but it isn't obvious to them. It's definitely a really powerful reminder there. We're at the halfway point Scott, do you want to just do our, you know, station
yeah.
break? And awesome. Then let's hear from Taylor.
Absolutely. Perfect. Thank you all so much for joining us today. It's been awesome so far. Thank you, Kayla, for talking about Magnolia and how that started up, and Blake, your conversation you're going to be having, and the cool things, the side projects that you're working on and stuff like that. Really appreciate that. And just hearing from like the authentic version of everybody here today has been really, really amazing. I love it. And so I just want to say, whether you're a beginning developer or whether you've been in this for a long time, it doesn't matter. We want to hear from everybody. So feel free to request to come up, just like Toby did there. And as you can see, we allowed him to come up here on stage. And so then you'll be able to ask questions or make comments or facts or opinions, whatever. It doesn't matter. We want to hear from everybody. So that way, you know, we just bring more value to everybody here in that's participating and in the audience. So thank you all so much. By the way, don't forget, if you haven't already, subscribe to JavaScript GM newsletter. Go to javascriptgm.com, subscribe there. That way you don't miss out on the latest and greatest in web development and JavaScript.
Okay, thank you, Scott. So, Toby, if you have a question for Blake, or is it for Taylor or something else?
Well, yeah, thank you very much, Ishan. Thank you very much, folks, Anthony, Scott. Yeah, I have a question actually for Magnolia.js. I was going to ask... regarding the event, is it more in person first? Because I was thinking of how CFP submissions work. So I was just wondering, is it like a very, you know, is it like a gathering, or how did the events work, and how is the CFP submissions for speakers? That was most of my question. I was just trying to understand that.
Can someone from Nigeria participate?
Yeah, exactly. We like people to be here, but. You know, that's not a strict rule. So just on a case-by-case basis, I guess.
Well, Toby's pretty awesome, so if you want to make an exception.
Yes. Yeah, million JS, man. I saw you got that MacBook Pro in the other day. It's awesome.
So it sounds like he should, you know, you'd consider a CFP if he submitted one, even though it'd be remote. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay.
Are CFPs closed right now, or are they open?
Yeah, they're definitely closed right now.
Right. I
feel. Yeah.
So for next year, though.
Next year.
Yeah. Well, we're like 13 yeah. days out from the event, so yeah, they're
right.
I would be driving myself nuts if I was trying to look at CFPs right now.
Yeah. Well, how about this?
When do you typically open up the CFPs? Is it like 6 months in advance?
Last year was the first year we did. Well, I guess for this year was the first year we did a CFP. So I guess there's no typical time frame, but we'll announce it. So, and there will be plenty of time. I think last time we had it open for like 3 months or something. So, there'll be plenty of time to submit whenever we do announce.
Did you just like pick your friends previously when there was no CFPs?
Yeah, I would just reach out to people and ask, and that was terrible for me because I feel like I'm terrible about asking for help anyway, which is the worst quality to have in a conference organizer. But. Like, that was basically what I would do in the past, was just reach out to people who I know had spoken at conferences before.
Just straight, straight nepotism.
Yeah, basically. Because, like, I mean, all the CFP things that are out there cost money, and as we've discussed, we don't have any. So, but this year I was just like, well, screw it, this will just make my life easier, so I did it anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so it sounds like get on the mailing list and then to be notified when the CFP opens up. But thank you for the question. It's definitely a good one.
Yeah, we don't have a mailing list right now either, which is a problem, but that's coming. We'll have a mailing list on the website at some point.
Okay. Follow on Twitter.
Yeah, I just did that, and I turned on notifications, so I'll just be notified as to when that happens. Yeah, thank you very much for the amazing answers.
No, thank you for the question. Okay, Taylor, let's hear from you. You'll be speaking at Magnolia as well. You've got an extensive career, for those who don't know, in the recruiting space. Frequent speaker at a lot of conferences. Your talk is A Manifesto in Hiring. Do you want to walk us through what you're going to be talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, thanks for everybody putting this space on. I appreciate it and inviting me. It means a lot. So this talk is kind of, I'm kind of pivoting this talk a little bit, but it was originally intended just for hiring managers. And I'm kind of now kind of talking both at hiring managers and job seekers in this talk. But I think the biggest bottleneck is, we could probably all agree in your career, is the interviewing process. I think what I've realized, I was just in Atlanta last week speaking at North Atlanta JavaScript user group, and we got onto the topic of interviews, and we talked about it for like almost 2 hours. Like, literally, the guys who run that, Pratik and Vincent, were like, "All right, we got to wrap this shit up." And so I got out of that meetup. I was like, man, it actually gave me a lot of motivation for Magnolia, because people just are terrified of interviews, and rightfully so. And I also think, like, most hiring managers suck at interviewing too, and also rightfully so. There's no playbook. And so what this is, and this is kind of more of like a checks and balances. Like, I understand that I'm only one recruiter, I'm only one person, I'm not the end all be all, but I've also seen hundreds, if not thousands, of companies fail when it comes to interviewing. And in my 12 years of, you know, recruiting, I've seen probably only a handful of companies do it the right way. And so what my talk is what's really focused on is really like, is coming to the talk, taking notes, and then going back to your engineering teams to be like, okay, are we doing these things? And then as an interviewer, it's like, okay, are we doing these things? Like, am I doing these things, these simple blocking and tackling steps that most people don't know about, right? Like, most people don't have their about me statements nailed down. Most people don't even research the company before they interview with them, right? Hiring managers suck at writing job descriptions. Hiring managers suck at giving feedback. So for me, it's kind of this playbook that I'm starting to create to help equip job seekers and hiring managers on how to be better.
Wow, there's so many threads I want to go and unpack there.
I know. It's a lot.
And it's very timely right now in the current economy. So, you know, one of the things you mentioned is you've seen very few companies who do it right. Could you name drop some companies that you think do it right?
I can. I mean, so back when I worked in our Raleigh office in 2013, there was an e-com company that spun up called Channel Advisor. Kevin Fiesel, who I placed, he's really big in the data engineering community. I placed actually most of their data engineering team. There's another woman who's really big now in the engineering community, data engineering community, named Tracy Baggiano. I placed her too. And what they did is, so this was when everybody was on site, they would literally do like an hour and a half phone call. They would fly you in the next week for a 3-hour, 4-hour on site, fly you back same day, and then make you an offer.
Wow.
And it was so quick, so thorough, so easy that, and their retention rates with us were through the roof, because internal TA, internal talent acquisition, trusted us. And we trusted them, and it was surprisingly, it was a very simple process. So that's one. There is a local guy in town. He's a CTO of a startup. They just got their Series A. It's my boy Daniel Norton in Nashville. It's a company called Neural Payments. Neural Payments, they are the competitor to Zelle. So if anybody knows Zelle, the banking payment app. Yeah, mm-hmm. So they're the competitor. The thing with Zelle is, like, if a bank signs up for Zelle, it's basically like they got to give you like a ton of data on their like users and stuff. And Neural Payments is like, hey, we just want to like integrate with your stuff. Like, we don't really care about anything else. So so he and I are really good friends. And, you know, this hire didn't go through, but it takes this type of conversation. He came to me and was like, hey, we have a bunch of Rust that we need, not actual Rust, like the Rust, the programming language. And he was like, we have a bunch of Rust that like needs to be rewritten, documented, and we want a full-time person. And I said, that's probably not going to happen because how much can you pay? And he told me, I go, yeah, you're about $70,000 under budget. He goes, oh. I said, let's do this. I said, let's find a consultant who can come in and do this thing for 5 to 10 hours a week. And that way he can help train up your staff and then leave. There's no like obligation to keep him long term. My buddy, the CTO, was like, that's great. Now, did it go through? No, because some of the requirements changed when it comes to hiring. Because then they just realized they needed to hire just more of a junior developer. They did it within like 2 interviews and it was easy. But one thing I appreciated that is he listened to me and trusted me. And took my advice on how to staff up his team. And granted, like not all recruiters have my background. I understand that. But I think the hiring managers who can really put a lot of trust in recruiters, especially on the agency side, because we see so much, can really help level up your staff.
Interesting. So on the flip side, if you're, you know, most people are not on the hiring side, they're on the applying side.
Yeah.
What do you do if you feel like the company, you know, you're applying to is doing it wrong? You know, let's say I attended your talk and I saw the checklist and I'm like, oh my gosh, they're not doing these things. What power do you have as the applicant?
I mean, right now, not much. I'm just going to be brutally honest. I mean, we're still in very much of a candidate driven market, but I think it's, listen, I talk a lot about dating. And the job search, there is just a tremendous amount of similarities. And listen, our spouse, for those of us who are married on here, our spouse has got red flags, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, like I got red flags, right? And so, you know, I'm sure some of y'all maybe nod your head, maybe not Anthony because he's on his honeymoon, but, you know, he's still early on, everything's great still. But, you know, all that being said, I'm getting a lot of hundreds and laughy face. So that's resonate with the people. But, yeah. So for me, I just think it's things to keep in. Yeah, no, I just think it's things to keep in mind. I'm not saying that if they do 3 out of the 5 things wrong, you need to run away screaming. But I think it's just things to be mindful of.
Okay, I think we have somebody who raised their hand. Spaghetti Code. Did you have a question for Taylor?
No, I was just popping in, saying what's up. I'd like to join technical spaces. If I don't know, it seemed like some of y'all were and. I don't think I raised my hand. I think I waved to come up, but I'm going to be chilling here for just a little bit. I have a lot of corporate knowledge as well. It sounds like some of y'all do and a lot of, but I'm a developer / entrepreneur mostly, but definitely can understand most of this and relate to it. So, you know, that's why I come on Spaces. I tend to help a lot of people out with this kind of thing. So, okay. Just listening in right now. I mean, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Taylor. So, you know, you alluded to, you know, I think you called it a candidate driven market. How would you, characterize
it? Well, right now it's a client. Yeah. It's a client driven market. Yeah. It's a company driven market. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the state of the market and what recommendation would you give to somebody to try and stand out?
To be a client-driven market versus
Client is like kind of in my brain because that's who we work with. But yeah, company-driven market. I mean, right now at the end of the day, like there's more developers than there is jobs open right now, right? And so, you know, it's been a wild ride. 2020 to 2022, it was nuts. There was definitely an overhiring. I called it. I hate to be that guy, but that's why I put out content so I can be historically accurate.
You called the top, you saying?
Yeah. I called what we're going through right now. We were hiring with reckless abandonment. People were having like 6-7 managers in 6 months. It was absolute chaos. There was such a money grab. And I knew nothing good could have come out of this. And so, we are definitely feeling, the correction of what has occurred. I'm not sure anything like that. Like, I don't know when this is going to turn. I think there are signs of life though. I actually tweeted this morning so I can get some feedback.
I just read that.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at the comments, it's, you know, so, I've talked with a few of my buddies who are still agency recruiters. They said hiring is happening, but everybody's still money conscious. So the hiring positions are staying with internal recruiters, not agency recruiters. Most of the chatter, there are a lot of internal recruiters that work for the company that are active on LinkedIn, but more of the chatter is caused by agency recruiters. So that's why you're not hearing a lot. And then the second thing is a lot of recruiters are starting to get hired again, which signals hiring is about to happen. And then a lot of my developer friends have commented on that tweet and said they're starting to see an uptick in DMs as well. So what my gut is saying is I don't think we're ever going to get back to where we were in 2020 to 2022. That was unrealistic. But I do think we're going to get back to more of a normal market, in my opinion, at the end of Q1 next year. But again, I mean, you know, but then if you read all these, you know, business email newsletters and stuff, they're saying this is a whole nother conversation, but they're talking about still a recession could happen, yada, yada, yada. So I don't know. Again, like I said, I don't know it exactly, but my gut is saying at the end of Q1, we'll start to see the floodgates open up a little bit more.
That's really smart looking at like recruiters as a hiring signal for further hiring.
Well, and that's where I think a lot of us, when I say us, I just mean the engineering community, really doesn't understand that recruiters are a wealth of knowledge. And I'm not really in a traditional recruiting seat anymore. You know, working for a talent marketplace is kind of like, I just want to get y'all into our community. I don't really necessarily place you in jobs. You actually apply to your jobs on your own within our Slack platform. But at the end of the day, like, I'm still up on trends. Recruiters are still up on trends. If you want to know how much you're worth, recruiters know more about how much you're worth than some industry report that was put out. So yeah, I mean, you should really lean on recruiters locally and nationally and just kind of pick their brains on things.
Hey, I had a couple things I wanted to say, if that's okay. I don't know if someone else, or were you about to say something? Is on?
I was going to ask a follow-up question, but we love audience participation, so go ahead.
Maybe most of this is opinion. I'm just giving my experience. So, I mean, people look up what the market is. You know, they use reports, et cetera. But something that I do find is the ones who are actually in tune with what's going on in the corporate world, they'll actually reach out to individuals who have been doing it in their similar fields, and they'll find out what they're getting paid in a similar market, similar company size, similar region, et cetera, and then kind of adjust accordingly. And what I tend to find is people can make a lot more money. And you're right. Recruiters definitely have an idea of what you're worth and what companies are willing to pay. But I think what I find generally is there's this large disconnect, even for the technical ones. And because, you know, I don't want to speak ill of anyone, but I was just saying, you know, there are recruiters, you know, I mean, there are some that have been doing tech for a while, but, you know, something that I do find as well, I was going to mention this earlier, with the overhiring of developers, something I see with that, even when they're under hiring, to be honest with you, is just developers that aren't qualified. Now, I don't develop for like corporations full time or anything as a job because I don't really have a desire to do that. I prefer more like managing infrastructure and stuff or particular systems. You know, it's a lot easier to do and you make a fair amount of money, so it's just a lot easier. But when I reach out to these developers and help them with issues, just really basic issues, and I mean this respectfully, but they just seem so disconnected from like what a computer is, what they're even doing. Like, I helped this guy out yesterday to fix something, and he didn't even know what an environment variable was. And this guy was getting paid probably double what I am. And it's just very frustrating, right? Because I see this on almost a daily basis. And not just like the company that I'm at, but every company that I've ever worked for and had to help people like fix their issues, fix systems, et cetera. And it's just so common. And, you know, I haven't been in the industry for 20 years or anything, but, you know, it's been over 10 years now. And I don't know how long, probably 15 years. And I've always seen that. And it's just something that I wanted to point out. And
okay, thank you. One of the things Taylor you mentioned is it's not going to get back to what we had, you know, so you called end of Q1 of next year, and you mentioned it'll get back to normal. It won't be what we saw in, you know, the last few years. Could you describe for people who, you know, call it come of age in tech during the zero interest rate phenomenon, what normal should look like in your sense?
Man, that's really hard to quantify. I think the easiest way to describe it is you won't be able to sleepwalk through an interview anymore, in that you're still going to have competition. It's still going to be like, you know, not everybody's going to be hiring, but I think it's going to be more of a consistent stream of hiring, right? So you're not going to see companies like, I was getting called during 2020, 2022. Like, I had one company get their Series B round, and they needed 70 engineers. And it was like, first off, when any time a company says they need to hire that many engineers, they really don't. Like, I think they ended up hiring like 30. And
they need to read the Mythical Man Month.
Yeah, I mean, it just like when they say things like that, my eyes roll in the back of my head. I'm like, all right, sounds good. And then we were getting companies like, I need to hire 10 engineers. Like, there was just such this massive amount at one time hiring, where I think now you're going to get, hey, we need 2 engineers, we need 5 engineers, hey, we need an engineer. Like, I think hiring will start to happen again. I think agency recruiters will start to get involved again. I think there will be definitely a surge, but it won't be the growth, like just the massive amounts of hiring at one time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, unless you're clerk.
Oh, go ahead.
I said, unless you're clerk.
Yeah, no, seriously. They're snatching everybody up right now. It's insane.
Yeah.
What would that look like from the candidate position? Maybe like, you know, the length of the interview process will get, you know, will take, expect this amount of time. Is there like a qualitative, like, where people
give you
an interview cycle is like 2 weeks, or you could have 3 companies bidding against you. It'll probably be
incremental. I would have people have 5, 6, 7 offers at one time. And I had people like probably peace out on interviews if they didn't get a job offer within 2 weeks. Like, we were forcing, like, I'm telling you, there were developers that would get a job offer sight unseen off a phone interview.
Wow.
I mean, a perm offer, salary offers, not contract. Like, I understand contracting roles in freelancing get a little quicker. It's like, hey, yeah, you can spell JavaScript, you're hired. But I mean, perm jobs was nuts. I mean, like I said, so I don't think you're going to have that. I think as a job seeker, I think, you know, you may have, you know, 2 to 3 offers instead of 5 to 7 offers. But I still think, I still think it's going to come back. I still think it's going to be good. It just won't be the, hey, I have like 7 offers right now.
Yeah. I mean, one thing also, I mean, there's so many different variables too, I feel like, as well. Like, for example, you know, there's almost like a shift in the verticals that are hiring, right? That's another thing too. Like, it went from all these social platforms hiring and ads companies, if you want to say, you know, like Google and Facebook,
there's
so much money being flooded in the market, whereas now there's not as much money being flooded into ads because people are cutting their marketing budgets and yada, yada, yada. But now,
except for AI, am I right?
Exactly. That's exactly what I was about
to say. That's where you were
going. That's literally where I was going with this. So now there's a new vertical, right? And it's like AI and all these different companies that are getting funded hundreds of millions, of dollars to get seed A, seed B all at once. And so it's kind of crazy what I'm seeing there in that area. And so a lot of people, some people are getting ahead of the game and focusing on that as a developer, and many aren't because they're afraid of what that looks like, or they're not realizing. We were just talking about this the other day with Brian Douglas from OpenSauce, about how easy it is to spin up AI, and that you should just try it if you haven't already, and maybe like work on some side AI projects and stuff, because it's really easier than you think. When someone like me can do it, so can you. I'm telling you. Like, I've spun up stuff. I've done a few AI projects, and it's pretty cool. So, like, you don't have to know how to create the models, right? They're there. That's why ChatGPT-4 is there. That's why people are using all that stuff. You know. Anyway, I'm going into a rabbit hole here, but I think there's so many other variables that are going to help to build out that, like, you know, that hiring potential, like you were saying, over the next year or so.
Basically, go where the money is.
Definitely.
I'll just throw in there, if you wanna get started with AI, you could make a home cooked app first.
Right, which is perfect, which is what Blake was talking about before. Yeah. Hey, Blake, that's a good question. Not to jump around too much, but have you done anything with AI to help you with anything that, you know, your day-to-day?
Not yet, but I have ideas just sort of, you know, percolating. So I don't know when I'll get around to it. But I am interested to see, like, I feel like in AI there's a lot of potential, like, assistive tech applications that should be, I mean, like, basic ones being, you know, like predictive text or stuff like that, which we kind of, you know, already have, but I'm not sure, like, for example, like Apple I guess this is like related, but you know, they just have this accessibility feature where users who are at risk of voice loss can create a digital voice based on their existing voice.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw that kind of stuff, and it's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw the feature on my phone and I'm like, oh, cool. I might try this later. And I think I saw first, you know where I first saw it? Most people probably know who this is. MKBHD, right? Marquez Brownlee.
Oh, yeah.
I think he was talking about it on his channel. That's pretty cool. Awesome, man. I would love to, if you do anything with it, I'd love to hear about it. So be sure to tweet about it, X about it, post about it, something about it. And
that's the term, right?
For sure.
Hey, I just want to mention, I do have, I'm not going to break it all down here because I don't want to do that, you guys, but I do have something I want to develop if anyone's interested. I mean, it would just be piggybacking on existing AI systems. It's not, you know, developing your own or training your own. There's no point in doing that for this. And it's something that it's a pretty large market that's going to be opening up any days. So it's related to like call quality assurance and things like that, because a lot of those reps, they're going to be letting go in the next few years probably, and a lot of companies already switched to AI systems for grading calls, etc. So there's a few companies already doing it, and
and I'm wanting to develop
one, so anyone who has that information and stuff, like, wants to work on it with me, let me know, because I'm having to advise everyone on it along the way, and it's very frustrating. I need someone who's kind of already up to par, and so.
Cool. Thanks, man. Yeah. So DM him if you're interested. But there's a lot of companies out there that are also using AI for those initial calls and leads and stuff too. I know a couple.
No, I mean for grading calls. So
I know what you meant. I'm stating that skipping the grading. I meant just like doing the actual.
IBM came out with something like 20 years. I don't know how long it's been, but they had something that they were using years and years and years ago. Probably Watson. I think that's what it is. Yeah. But,
anyway, cool. Awesome. Thanks so much, man. Taylor, sorry, didn't mean to go down too much rabbit hole there, but,
I'd be curious, you know, for Taylor's, you know, given the unique lens he has, I've heard exactly what you described. In fact, that was, you know, one of my list of interview questions, Scott, was about, like, what I heard is that, you know, what we're seeing in the hiring is that it's now less tech companies hiring developers. It's now outside of AI. It's now traditional companies hiring. And that's currently what the shift is. And then there's, of course, AI. So would you say that's accurate, Taylor? Or do you have another theory about what's happening? And would you agree? Are there other hot areas besides AI where you see demand is picking up?
You know, I can't really answer that question accurately. The only reason for that is because I'm still so new at Gun that the way I sit, I kind of sit between our DevRel team, our product team, and our marketing team. And I don't have a lot of knowledge of what type of companies are coming at us right now. But yes, I would say I have seen a lot less like true tech companies hiring, but more of like Wells Fargo's hiring a ton of development. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm starting to see other industries hiring outside of just pure tech. Because again, right, I think pure tech took advantage of the money grab. VCs were cutting millions of dollars of checks with, you know, sight unseen, with no due diligence whatsoever. And I think everybody's in timeout right now in tech. And so I think that being said, other industries are hiring because of that. or able to take advantage. So, well, boys, I appreciate it. I have to go wake up my daughter from her nap. So I got to bounce, but I appreciate the invite, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much, Taylor, for joining us. Everybody, before he leaves the room, be sure to click on his face there and follow him if you don't already. Great connection to have, great person to know, even if you don't need a job, whatever, hit him up. He's fun to listen and watch. So he does this like daily vlog thing, pretty cool to check out and see the life of, of Taylor.
I appreciate absolutely. It.
No, thank you.
All right, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Appreciate it. And that goes for anybody else that was up here on stage. If you got any value from anybody else up here, be sure to click on their face and follow them as well. Magnolia, click on them, follow them. Obviously, if you haven't gotten tickets yet to go to Magnolia, I don't know what you're doing, but you need to do that. I think, did they go up as of yesterday? Was yesterday the last day?
Yeah, yesterday was the last day.
Yeah.
So they're still available, but...
They're still there. Right. But you missed the early entry price. Anyway, it's still a great deal, actually, compared to many other events out there. So be sure to swipe those up and get to the event. That way you can, you know, be a part of something really great. And yeah, by the way, next week we will also be chatting with a couple more people from the event that we'll be speaking as well. And those folks will be Jeremy Mice and Todd Libby. So that should be a great time.
We'll have to check with Jeremy about that because I know he had to drop because of layoffs.
Got it. That's unfortunate. Okay. Well, you know what? Things always happen here in this tech world. But maybe he'll still want to hang out. Maybe not. I don't know. Either way, we will definitely have Todd Libby there. And I'm sure Kayla will be hanging out with us too. So be sure to join that conversation as well. And I think Todd is going to be, if I'm not mistaken, he's going to be talking about deceptive patterns, dark patterns over the web. So that'll be interesting to talk about on the show. Yeah, once again, thank you so much for joining us. Greatly appreciate it. It is we're pretty much at the hour here. I know Ishan has a hard stop. And I think we're going
to
call it.
Thank you to all of our guests and to Magnolia JS Conference. But Scott, I'll let you take us out since I have to hop to my next one.
Yep. Thank you, Ishan. Greatly appreciate you. I think that pretty much sums it up. Thank you all so much for being here. If you got value, you know, JavaScript Jam wouldn't mind the follow as well. And if you haven't already, go to javascriptjam.com, sign up for our newsletter so you don't miss out on the latest and greatest in web development and JavaScript. Anthony, be safe on the rest of your travels there around Italy and all that good stuff. We'll love to hear more when you get back in town here soon. So thanks for joining us, man.
So much pasta.
Yes. Blake, thank you so much for joining us, man. Looking forward to hearing more about how your talk goes at Magnolia. And by the way, if you're feeling like it, anybody who's here that's not a regular, if you want to become a regular, it's okay. You can do that. We're here every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We always love having more people join us because it just spices up the conversation and brings more value. So, all right. Thank y'all so much. We love y'all. And we'll see you in the next one. Thank y'all so much. We love you. We'll see you in the next one.